Holly Cotton here, and you guys know, first of all, I say this every time, I have a fabulous woman as a guest, that my whole passion in life is empowering women and also using my voice to highlight empowered women, women who are also empowering other women. So I am so excited today. I have Ami Shade Bernie Scott, and she is actually going to talk to us. First of all, just go follow her right now, okay? Because she has tons and tons and tons of information for women that are going through menopause, perimenopause. She answers a lot of questions. She has tons of resources, because I got bad news for you guys. It's either here or it's coming. One of the or it's here and you don't even know it's here. So she's going to educate us on all of that. That's what her platform is. She actually has she does like actual expert panel, expert speaking about this. She has awards in it. Like if you're talking about a guru of menopause, I got it for you right here. So welcome, Ami Shade, to Holly Cotton Conversations.
Wait, hello there, Holly Cotton. No pressure at all. It's like, she is the one. I'm like, okay, let me pull out all of my good brain thinking today.
And here's the thing, you talk about it so much that it probably just comes off in regular conversation.
It does.
You don't even know it.
It really does. I can tell you, it's the interesting thing. I could be in the grocery store, and because I'm recognizable by my gray hair, I will have random people come up and start talking to me. And my youngest son is like, this is hilarious. You have really become a menopause guru. I'm like, I guess I have. So I'm gonna have to tell him that you said that.
Hey, whatever. Look, let me tell you something. Whatever it takes to get this, I mean, you have celebrities that, or you have these fake celebrities on TikTok and social media for doing dances and doing the most annoying, crazy, you know what I'm saying?
Anything.
And they go viral for stupid stuff. So I'm like, I love it. I love to see whenever someone is doing something that they're passionate about and also educating other people. So girl, I need all my followers. Go follow her too. Let's go.
Thank you. I appreciate you, Holly. I do.
Okay. So first let's rewind.
Okay.
Because not everyone just wakes up and decides that they're going to have a mission to educate the world on menopause. So before we go into... Before we go into some of those common topics, I want to know, how did you find this to be something that you were passionate about?
Well, I tell you what, it was definitely not my life's passion. My life's passion is liberation work, social justice work. So I have been working in the movement spaces around social justice and different nonprofits around social justice since I was in my late 20s. And so literally it will be 30 years next year, because my oldest son will be 33 next year. And he was 3 years old when I started working full time doing social justice work. That didn't mean that I wasn't doing it on the weekends and as a part of the community. It's something that's just been a really important, I don't know, part of my hard wiring to be involved in efforts that make life better for all of us. But in particular, make life better for Black people. And so that's been something, a part of my like passion since I was in high school and while I was in college. But I had been, you know, working in the nonprofit sector in particular for the last 10, 15 years, reproductive justice. So this is, you know, and menopause is a part of the reproductive justice movement space, though I don't think that there's enough programming, education, training, and research around it. So it's not as talked about as it could be, but that's changing. And I'm very happy about that. But to go back to my origin story, and thank you for asking me this. I'm a little bit of an origin story nerd. I love when I learn about a person, I'm like, well, where did they come from? And who are they? And why is this important to them? So I always feel like that's a great question. So I'm originally from North Carolina and have been working for quite some time doing social justice work. And in 2018, I found myself at a really hard year. I was 51. And that was the year that we lost our first sibling. My brother Fred passed away unexpectedly. He had a heart attack and died in his sleep. And our parents had been ancestors for a while. My dad passed away when I was one. My stepdad passed away when I was 33. My mom had passed when I was 31. So my siblings and I range in age from our 70s to our 50s. So my eldest siblings are between 20, 16, 17, 18 years older than my younger sister and I. So they're like a second set of parents, you know what I mean? And so when my brother passed away, it just really took the wind out of me. It, you know, it's like the reminder. We get so many reminders about our mortality, so many. And I think as human beings, especially human beings who live in this society in the United States, we've run from our mortality. We have all kinds of negative, confusing, scary thoughts about being human. And so when my brother passed away, I felt like a lot of that came and sat on the bed beside me and was like, listen, are you happy? Are you doing the things that make you happy? Are you spending time with your kids in the ways that you want to and your friends? Like, what's up? And so I was just kind of like, you know, grappling with that and thinking about that. And also my siblings, we're all in pairs. Each of us has our kind of like, I don't know, womb mate that we grew up with. So Fred and my older brother, Charlie, were a pair. My older sister, Marianne and Michelle, they're a pair. And my younger sister, Georgette, and I are a pair. So I was also very concerned about my brother, Charlie, because he lost his pair. You know, the person who he grew up with, spent the most time with, was like his bestie. And they had retired from Maryland to North Carolina to live close by each other. And they saw each other every day. Like they talked every day and they saw each other every day. So, and it was my brother, Charlie, who found him. So it was just a really challenging time for our family. And then there was a hurricane called Florence in 2018. And yeah, it was got a lot of fanfare. It was a huge storm. And where I'm from in North Carolina originally is a beautiful place called New Bern. And New Bern is in eastern North Carolina. It sits in between two rivers. And it's about 40 minutes from the beach. So we are used to hurricanes. This is a place where everybody's used to preparing for hurricanes. This is not a surprise to us. But there was a 500-year flood that basically landed on my hometown. My oldest sister, who was 71 at the time, had to be boat evacuated from her house. She doesn't know how to swim. It was a whole mess, Holly. It was just a whole mess. So long story short, I was working for a national reproductive justice organization. I went home, took some time off to help, you know, do what I could do. I came back to work. And when I came back to work, they told me that they were letting me go. I was very hurt. I was confused. We had done really good work together. And I realized in retrospect, the letting me go was actually liberating me to do what I'm doing now. Everything fell in line with a hard stop. You know, it's like a hard reboot. And you're like, ooh, that felt unnecessary. But no, it was, because I needed to do a hard pivot.
I always say nothing motivates you more than hurt feelings.
Listen.
You get your feelings hurt about something. Oh, you thought you was, me? Bet. I'm about to build my own building and y'all ain't going to come.
It was like, oh my God. Like when I tell you the amount of anger and rage I got to work through, the anger and rage that was wrapped up in my grief, the anger and rage that was wrapped up in looking at these systems that were failing the people in my hometown from trying to rebuild from this hurricane, the anger I felt of working for an organization that I trusted and then feeling like I had been cast out. And I was also one of the oldest people on staff. So I was just like, what is this? What is this? So I said, I'm going to take a sabbatical. I had some really good friends who did a little intervention. And they were like, girl, you should take a sabbatical. And I was like, I would love to do that, but I am not independently wealthy. So how will I do that? And it was my oldest son. He suggested that I start a Patreon. I didn't even know what Patreon was 5 years ago. I was like, I don't know what that is. And he was like, we'll help you out. So this is another piece of the story of people will help you when you ask for help. Like they will. And my friends helped me. My family helped me. People who I do movement work with helped me. They all were like, we'll help you. Let's get it together. I said, okay, let's get it together. So initially, I was just going to take a year off, take care of myself, rest up, do some creative stuff, and then like get back out there in the workforce. But the universe had another thing in mind. I wanted to interview other Black women who were midlife and older to just say, how are you navigating? How's life for you? Like, you know, whether it's, you know, you're navigating work or navigating family or navigating health or whatever, like just talk to me. And I wanted to record it because that's the kind of person that I am. I'm clearly an organic archivist. Like I really love archiving things and then being able to share it with other people in the hopes that it helps somebody else figure out how to do things that are meaningful for themselves. And that's how it got started. I had no intention of starting something that would become what it has become, which was an important community for a lot of people who are very confused about what's going on in their lives, and they feel invisibilized, and they feel a little crazy, and they feel confused, and sometimes scared. And so that's how we got started 5 years ago, with my kind of crash and burn led to this process. Yeah.
So I was trying to see. So, okay. So I'm looking at your Instagram page right now. So how did it go from just starting to say, hey, how are you guys doing, to now having all of these post about menopause and being like a spokesperson for menopause? I'm a Sade. I'm sitting up here and I'm doing the same thing as you. And I'm like, but I don't ever think I'm going to be talking about menopause. So how did that transition happen?
Okay.
From there to
that's
that?
Fair. Okay. That's fair. So I live in Durham, North Carolina, which is a place that has a beautiful creative community that's also extremely socially conscious. So I reached out to a couple of people and said, listen, I have this idea that I want to interview people and I want to record it. What do you think? And they were like, oh, this is a great idea, Omi. You should totally do it. Why don't you do a podcast? And I was like, I don't know how to do that. And my producer, Mariah, who's still working with me, said, I'll help you. It's no problem. Like we pick who you want to record, who you want to have conversations with, and I'll come with you. We'll record it. I'll edit it for you. And then you can figure out where you want it to live. And because I didn't have a website, I didn't have anything, Holly, nothing. I had an idea and I had a community that said yes to me. I had reached out to about 9 women and all of them said yes. And I interviewed 5 of them. And Mariah literally gifted us with the name. Mariah said, why don't you call it the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause? Because we were talking about all the different things that you navigate midlife and older. And I was like, yeah, you know, and menopause, blah, blah, blah. And I kept it moving. And Mariah said, we should call it the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. And I thought it was funny. I said, that's really cute. That's funny. Okay, let's call it that.
And I was actually looking, I was going to interject and I was going to say, and you guys, the name of what it is the Black Girls Guide. So it started off as a podcast, kind of like this. And then it grew into where people started.
It's yes, like, huge. So what happened is initially it was going to be kind of like a short term project podcast. And then I had this idea, because in my heart, I'm an organizer. So I was like, not everybody's going to want to listen to a podcast. And so if there's something really meaningful that comes out of these conversations, how can we share it with the community? I said, well, why don't we start having some community conversations too? So we started the podcast. Then we decided we were going to host some intergenerational conversations. And those first conversations were called Tea and Toddies. And what we would do is we would bring people together and we would have non-alcoholic tea options, all kinds of delicious teas. And we will also make a signature toddy because as Southern folk, you know, we love toddies. Toddies for your body.
Hot toddies.
Hot toddies, honey. Right. Yes. When you're sick, what do you need? A toddy. When
I was about to say, I remember my grandma gave me a hot toddy. And now I'm like, Mama, I'm pretty sure you should not have me giving children hot toddies.
Listen, I bet you felt better though, didn't you?
I did. I was drunk at 12.
But that's not my, but that's what I'm thinking. So your grandmama knew that there's medicine in spirits, heart spirits. And so we would meticulously craft these delicious toddy elixirs and then invite people to come and have these conversations. We're like, okay, cool. That's great. And then it became very popular. Folk were like, are you going to do this again? Are you going to do this again? And I was like, maybe this is a thing. So 2020, we rolled into the year. I was like, let's do another season. And if after the season is it, people are not excited, then we'll call it a, you know, a day. And we were going to do tea and toddies in New York. And we had booked our flights to come to New York March the 10th. But the right in the world shut down. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. What are we going to do? We should pivot and figure out what we're going to do. So we still did the episode interviews. We were trying to figure out how to do that. And then George Floyd was murdered. And then Breonna Taylor was murdered. And so we were just like, okay, something else is percolating here. And that's when we published our first digital zine. And the zine is called Messages from the Menopausal Multiverse. Because we believe that there's a lot of wisdom that comes from people who've experienced menopause, whether they're alive or not alive. Like there's just so much wisdom in your body as a menopausal person. And so we wanted to offer that to the community kind of like as a big hug. You know, like when you said Mama gave you that toddy, I bet she also gave you good hugs too. And that kind of energy to say to the community, I know this is really hard and this should not be happening. But there's wisdom that we can take care of each other. We can keep each other safe. We can love up on each other. We can still find joy. We can protect each other. And so that birthed the first zine. And I said, okay, clearly this is a thing. I'm a very spiritual person. And so I was like, I need to check in. Like spiritually, like clearly something is happening here. And the download that I received through my spiritual practice is like, keep going. Don't stop. This is not a pet project. This is your passion. And it is manifesting in a way that you probably didn't expect. But this is not a one-off. Keep going. And so here we are, 5 years later, we went from having 1.5 people working on the Black Girls Guide. We got a $5,000 grant from the Effing Foundation for Sex Positivity. You could not tell us that we were not big time. We were like, uh-oh, that somebody that gave us some money to build a website. we're gonna build a web. And then, you know, and here we are now. We have 8 people on the team. It's an intergenerational team. The oldest person on our team is 57. The youngest person on our team is 23, though Asada is quite ancient. We say that she is our young ancestor because she is just the oldest person spiritually we have ever met. Just beautiful and talented. And we have traveled internationally. We have hosted conversations internationally. We have written for national and international publications. Like I just didn't, you could not have told me in 2018 when I was sitting on the floor in front of my ancestor altar, crying in front of my parents. Like life felt so hard and I was so sad. I was so sad.
And I also wanted to just sidebar with that as well, because I also wanted to just go into a little more detail of some of the people that you have worked with and the affiliations that you have, mm-hmm. because I think that that's also an important part of your credibility and just to show the impact that you're having. So So I know that you, some of your affiliations, the Honeypot Company, Electra Health, Society for Women's Health and Research, Sexploration Research and Study, National Menopause Foundation, Acorn Center for Restoration and Freedom, In Our Voice, National Black Reproductive, like big sex study with the University of Kentucky. So those are just some of the current affiliations that Omi Sade has. And so I'm like, I'm thinking like, how did you start? Because I know a lot of people look at your story, because I'll tell you this, there are so many people, especially on social media now, and they see people that are on these huge, like I just listed all, you know, just a little minute slice of some of the affiliations you have, but people see what, see your story and they're like, wow. So how did she go from that to talking about this to actually being on these national platforms? So what was that like, the transition from now I have a show, now I have this, now I have a podcast, now we're doing these events, now we're doing this stuff, to now actually people reaching out to you to be a spokesperson for that? Like, what was that process of where that shift was, where you were from this to now this?
Yeah, that also happened very organically. I remember, and I tease about this. Some people are familiar with this deck that I co-designed with Kendra called Say More. It's a deck that has 100 discussion cards, so you can start conversations about menopause, midlife. It's really fun. It's if people are used to either working with like oracle decks or angel cards or tarot, it's kind of like that. Well, the first time Kendra reached out to me was in the second season, towards the end of the second season of the podcast. They wanted to partner. And they were like, we would love to be a sponsor of the podcast. And we want to know what your rate is for pre-roll, mid-roll, and post-roll. Now, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about, Holly, right? I had no idea.
I don't know, like $15? I don't know. Right?
I was like,
you know, you always undersell yourself. I don't know.
I don't.
32?
I don't know what a mid-roll is, but I am a Gen Xer. So I went to the internet and was like, research, research, research. And I was like, I don't know how to calculate this. Like, this feels like a false calculation for me to say to this person what it is. So I said, can you mind if we jump on a quick Zoom to talk to each other? And they were like, sure. So after we talked for about an hour, I said, I will get back to you with a rate that I think is fair. And I did, and they said yes. And we've been partnering ever since, which is really interesting. And I think that that kind of cracked the door open on some other things. You know, in 2020 in particular, so many people were at home, and we, you know, we were paying attention to a lot of things. We were watching things. We were meeting people for the first time virtually. And I think that that opened the door up to me meeting a lot more people. And also there were people who were experiencing menopause at home by themselves and were like, what is this? I don't even know what's going on. I'm lucky to be in a community of folk who were like, you should talk to my friend Omi. She just launched this thing. Maybe she can be supportive for you. And it just started to, it's almost like there's a herb, I think it's called the Rose of Jericho. And when you see it, it's dry. But then when you put water on it, it opens up into this really beautiful like flower. And I think that's what happened. Like there was just this dry kind of like space. And then I kept watering it and it kept opening up. And so people were like, hey, would you like to, the first time I got reached out to by the media, I think it was the AARP Sisters newsletter. And I was like, okay. And you know, a local paper here in my hometown was like, hey, we'd like to talk to you about what you're doing. I was like, okay. So I think my initial reactions those first couple of years was like, you want to talk to me? Why do you want to talk to me? I think they want to talk to me for a few reasons. One, we were talking and we continued to talk specifically about Black stories. And two, we were also talking about stories that were expansive to include very intentionally LGBTQ plus people. So we were talking to Black women, Black femmes, genderqueer, trans, non-binary people. Like that's consistently been a part of our process where we're like, everybody who has a uterus and ovaries does not identify as a woman. So it's really important for me as a person who is guided by social justice values to not further marginalize other Black people when I'm trying to make it like accessible and thoughtful and intentional. And I think that also probably was a pull for some folk. They were like, oh, well, we should talk to her. Now, there also were people who reached out to me and they wanted me to sell skincare products and deodorant and supplements. And I was like, after some time, I was like, I don't think that's my thing. It's not my thing. I'm not really interested in being a spokesperson for a group. I'm interested in partnership, which is why I love working with the Honey Pot. Like, we partner. They were hugely supportive of our first diasporic tour last year. We traveled to the UK and Toronto, Canada, and Puerto Rico and New York. And the Honey Pot was like, how can we support you? They made a financial investment in us, and they also provided us with so many Honeypot products. It was ridiculous. Like, my house looked like a Honeypot distribution center. It was just like, what do you need? You need foam wash, you need pads, what do you need? And they've just been great in that way and very thoughtful about how they partner. Same thing with Elektra and Kendra. Like, they were like, how can we support you? So it was relationships based on reciprocity. Partnerships based on respect, partnerships that were not trying to gain clout from BIPOC communities by having a Black face. They were like, this is not what we are interested in. We're interested in really honestly partnering with you and learning with you. And how can we be a good partner to communities that we are not serving well? And so I feel good about that. But that I know that our work is not for everybody.
I love that you did that, and I love that you said that, because there are so many times I say the same thing to people whenever I'm hearing someone's story or sharing their story, but also sharing my story as well. And I always say that you have to be very particular about what you align yourself with, because when you get into this world of influencer, when you get into this social media realm, I say the same thing. Like, I'm not going. People reach out to me, hey, this, send you this, do this. And I'm like, listen, I'm not that way. Like, I am not a content creator that is just on TikTok with affiliate programs and doing all of this. I have a mission, and my mission is Holly Cotton and to change the world and to be the change and to do this. So it's like, I can't just be having a bunch of junk in here just because you want to give me some money. Baby, yeah. I got my own money. Yeah. I don't need your stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's get that part free. Mm-hmm. So I think, but that's the problem. A lot of people get lost because when you don't see that vision or you don't know what you're trying to do, you're all over. And now you have a hodgepodge of stuff. Like, you guys knew you wanted to have the inclusion. You knew you wanted to have the representation of all of these different groups. And like you said, even just because you have a uterus doesn't mean that you're a woman. Just because you don't have a uterus doesn't mean you're not a woman.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I love that you guys are doing all of that also. So let me just ask you, just to get a few little questions in about, not little questions, but a few little topics in about some of the common questions that you talk about. So when you go to an event and you're on a panel, or when you're called in as someone, because of course, I'm glad you educated me, because I thought all you guys talked about was menopause. So now I realize, no, it's just life after a certain period of time when you get to midlife. So thank you for clarifying that. But whenever you're called in to actually come in and speak and be on a panel or talk, whatever, you know, one of these events or something. So what are some of the common topics that you're talking about other than menopause? You know, like when you go up and you're like, hey, this is my specialty. This is what I can educate you guys on.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things. One thing that we definitely talk about. There you go. One of the things we talk about all the time is bodily autonomy. Like, what does it mean to have ownership of your body and to feel like you have the agency and the authority to make choices about your body, your wellness, your health, where you're going to live, how you experience joy, how you experience pleasure, who you are in relationship with. We talk about that a lot. And actually, because our work is so intergenerational, we moved away from focusing on midlife Black folks and older to making sure that all of our conversations are intergenerational, because I imagine that if you could time travel back and have a conversation with 12-year-old Holly about where you are now, you would give her a lot of good information. And we want to make sure that the younger generation coming behind us has more information about how our bodies change over time, and that that's not a taboo topic, or that they're not getting, like, there's not a chokehold on what they think about their bodies because of patriarchy or misogyny. So we like try to disentangle these narratives. And so we just create a really soft, safe, beautiful space for people to tell their own stories. And once you start to tell your own story, then we start kind of wrapping your story in cultural context. Like, where do you think you got those messages from? Or why do you think it was so easy for you to do that, but not this? You know, and so we see that there's a through line from menstruation to menopause. So we talk about that. And we also talk about body sovereignty. Have you ever felt safe inside your own body? And if you have, what helped you feel safe? Who helped you feel safe? And what are the things that you do to remind yourself that this is your body? And if you never felt safe, how do you begin to tease that out with support? Because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor, but I do believe that stories have the ability to heal. And sometimes when you hear a story that resonates with you, because it feels like your story, it feels like somebody's talking right to you, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, it's almost like that song by Roberta Flack, Killing Me Softly. You're like, what is going on? Why is he singing to me? It's like, he's not singing to you. You needed to hear that. You needed something. And so I think that the way that we see storytelling as medicine, we engage in culture and narrative shift work through those stories. I think another thing that I get asked quite a bit is, why do Black women have a different experience? Like, what's up with y'all? Like, is it something physiological different? And I'm like, so here's the thing. Race is a construct. It's not real. Human beings are human beings. But race has been constructed for several reasons, most of them not good. And what has happened is racism, systemic racism, historical racism, institutional racism has made it very, very challenging for folk to understand what's going on in their bodies. It's a challenge. So I feel very clear that when I'm talking about the Black experience and menopause, I'm talking about what we experience historically and contemporarily, what we experience with our medical doctors, with nurse practitioners, with, you know, physician assistants, all of that. And also why that is the case. Like, nothing happens in a vacuum. There's always context. And so we always ground that in that way. So, you know, I've been on panels. I remember I was on a panel in Lisbon, Portugal. And when I introduced myself, the people in the audience laughed when I said that I was the creator of the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. And it wasn't like they were laughing at me. I think they thought I was teasing, that I was, you know, making a joke. And I was like, no, that's literally the name of our project. And one of the questions from the audience was, why do you think Black women have different experiences from white women? And my question back was, you're a physician. Why do you think? Like, literally, why do you think? Like, I didn't go to medical school. I don't have a master's in public health, but some things that I do know that create challenges for us physically is an increase in your cortisol levels. So you live in a world where your cortisol levels and your adrenaline levels are always elevated because you're navigating the world that sees you as not necessarily human or not valuable or not a safe person to engage with. Then if you have any other physical things going on with you, that cortisol level impacts that. It's called allostatic load. I will definitely do research on stuff. Like, I'm a nerd in that way. I will look things up. When your allostatic load is increased, it has a number of physical impacts. And so we all who have ovaries or had ovaries, we have progesterone and estrogen. When you've got an increase in your cortisol levels and your adrenaline levels and that allostatic load, it makes sense to me that you probably would have more intense hot flashes, or that you would start menopause earlier and it would last longer and be more intense. So what we are lacking is really good intersectional research to kind of dig into that and tease that out. And so I think that what we offer are the stories that can support the research. And we get to be pushy friends with researchers and healthcare providers to say, are you doing your due diligence? Are you doing your research? Are you doing your homework? Are you making sure that the healthcare that you're providing is inclusive and quality and it's not based on implicit bias? Are you making assumptions about my pain? Are you making assumptions about my life without knowing who I am? Maybe you spend some time getting to know me before you make that assumption. So I think that all of those things impact our experiences of having, going through menopause. And I think a lot of people don't even know that menopause actually is a day. So this is like, okay, y'all ready? If everybody's listening to the Holly Cotton show.
Conversations, right.
Oh, I got conversations with Holly Cotton. Get ready, break it down. Menopause is literally when you have not had a menstrual cycle for one full calendar year, 365 days, 12 months. If you went 10 months or 11 months and 29 days and your period comes back, the clock starts back over. So menopause is also on a spectrum. There is a pregame called peri, and peri is something else. Peri is what everybody's talking about. Honestly, the conversations we have about hot flashes and night sweats and brain fog and cognition and dry mouth and dry vaginas and painful sex, that's peri. Peri is the pregame.
And peri lasts a long time. Peri ain't the 12 months. Peri ain't 12 months.
No. Peri is years.
12 years.
Years. Plural. Peri is the pregame. And peri, for some people, peri shows up, slides into bed, no one knows none the wiser. Oh, well, that's interesting. What's going on here? And then sometimes peri shows up, snatches you out the bed, drags you down the steps, and you're like, what is going on here? So everybody's different, but you can anticipate that you will have some type of perimenopausal time period, and then menopause, that day, that anniversary where you celebrate no more menstrual cycles. Oh, we finished. And then postmenopausal, which your body is still those, you know, when there's that fire sale of your ovaries and they're like, get ready to turn the lights out, everybody. Last round, it's a wrap. Your body's still regulating. It's still figuring it out because these hormones bathe everything in your body, your hair, your eyes, your skin, your teeth, everything. And when those hormones shift and change, you'll notice all of these things will change.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say this too, just to add, because I'm a nurse too, so, and I do a lot of patient education, but I also want to say that a lot of people that go through the natural menopause process, what I explain to them is that you actually are almost, you have more of a positive experience, because I feel like when you're able to have that, like your body acclimates to certain things compared to a woman who has a hysterectomy, and all of a sudden the next day they wake up and they're in menopause.
Yes.
So at least perimenopausal, you might have one day, like you said, you don't even know the symptoms. You're just like, well, this is interesting. Wait a minute. Now I've got this. Okay. Now I need some KY. Now I have this. Now
why am I itchy?
Yeah. So at least you have a way and you can regulate, you can deal with symptoms. The women who have like a total hysterectomy where their ovaries are removed, it's like, bam, they wake up the next day and all of a sudden every possible thing that they could have experienced, it's like a lot of them wake up and they're totally caught off guard. And I know I had so many women, just me as a nurse, because I worked in OBGYN for a while, And they would be crying to me about it. And it's like, you know, you lose all your reproductive organs, plus you have these symptoms. And also a lot of transgender that start doing estrogen as well, that go from male to female, they start having different types of of things.
Everything. Like, yes. It's really, I'm glad you brought that up.
Just so you guys know, like, we're not just talking about a normal woman that's going through stuff. Like, there are so many other things that are intertwined where you could be menopausal or you could be having those, like you said, hormonal symptoms.
One of the things that we say all the time is there is no normal when it comes to menopause. There is no typical when it comes to menopause. Everybody who will experience menopause for whatever reason has their own journey. So we have interviewed younger people who experienced menopause because they had cervical cancer. Unfortunately, one of the youngest people we interviewed, who we adored, named Chaz Grissom, experienced menopause. They had stage 4 cervical cancer and they had a hysterectomy. And the oncologist didn't let them know that they were also going to go into menopause. They were like, they gave me a pamphlet about, you know, they gave me a thick notebook of all my treatment. And then there was a little pamphlet tucked inside that said something about medical menopause. But they didn't like elevate it to say, Chaz, after you have this surgery, you will wake up in menopause. That was never like proactively explained in that way. And so while Chaz is trying to wrap their mind around their treatment for cervical cancer, they're also navigating menopause. So you're like, I'm in chemo, I'm doing radiation, and I'm menopausal. That's a lot to kind of navigate when you're 32 years old, you know? So she's an example. We also interviewed a young person named Austin Smith. Austin is a transmasculine person. And he had a full hysterectomy in his late 20s. It was his gender-affirming surgery. Had a great gender-affirming care team who also forgot to mention, oh, and by the way, Austin, you're going to wake up and you're going to be menopausal. And then, so this is like this really interesting thing that happens when people are receiving care for whatever it might be, whether it's fibroids, endometriosis, PCOS, ovarian insufficiency or ovarian failure, cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, gender-affirming care. And there's this missing part of the conversation that needs to be elevated to say, and your body will also experience something that you probably weren't going to experience for another 20 years. And so you get fast-tracked. And we talk about what that does for you emotionally, physically.
Spiritually. I was going to add that on there. And I was going to say, and then the other thing is that anytime you're dealing with anything hormonal, you also have, now you have emotional impact. And that's why people, you know, whenever you talk about postpartum depression, but then that's why you also, if you look at the percentage of women that are, like you said, midlife and above, how many of them are on antidepressants? Because it's like when you start losing certain things, when you start adjusting it, and again, my specialty is kind of more in the cancer community, so I do a lot of stuff with cancer, but I get women all the time and they're just like, oh my gosh. And that's why I always try to educate people, like, yeah, we're not even talking about the physical changes, let's talk about the emotional changes. Because you have people that wake up and they're depressed. I went through it too. I was depressed just from the loss of function, from this to that, to this to that. There's a huge, huge emotional, impact of also dealing with hormones that people don't even think about. They just like, I'm just worried about this. And, you know, now I'm gonna have a hot flash. Girl, that's the least of your worries. Let me tell you some other stuff you better be worried about. You better figure out how to go deal with some.
It's an invitation. No, it's true. It's an invitation that you didn't expect. I think that we focus so much on the physical symptoms, and we focus so much. It's like, if you were to like put it in layers, we focus on the physical symptoms. And then if you take it down another layer, we focus specifically only on the vasomotor symptoms, which are the hot flashes, the night sweats, and all of that. If you take it down another layer, we don't talk about the emotional and mental impacts that has on people. And I think that's probably why our platform has become so popular is because we talk about the emotional, we talk about the mental health, we talk about the spiritual health, we talk about depression and anxiety and rage and grief. We talk about sex, you know, a lot of the conversations we've had around pleasure and sex has been around our own understanding of where pleasure actually derives from and where you get to experience pleasure and the assumption that you're not going to have pleasurable intimacy or sex as a postmenopausal person. And that's not true. Like there's a lot of misinformation around aging bodies and that aging bodies don't experience pleasure or desire pleasure. And that's not true either. So I think, you know, we're out here myth busting, doing a bit of myth busting and also trying to remind people through stories to be kinder to yourself. I think we are very hard on ourselves. And sometimes what we need to do or we are being invited to do is be more gentle and ease up. And I think that listening to stories is one of the ways I know for me personally, if I'm listening to a really good story, it lands on me in a different way. I'm like, oh my goodness, that really touched my heart. Or that really reminded me of something that I need to address or I get to address or I want to address, but I didn't know how. Or I never thought anybody else had this experience except for me. So now I know I'm not by myself. And I'm sure that that is something that you hear quite often when you're talking to people who are thriving and are moving and navigating through experiences with cancer, cancer diagnosis, post-cancer treatment, during cancer treatment. And to hear someone share your story and you're like, oh my God, I feel like somebody just like is ear hustling everything I have said, but only in my house or with the people who I trust the most. So there's a really beautiful way that we get to be a mirror, a cultural mirror for people as they navigate.
And, you know, I was just going to just say the last point of I guess, to kind of piggyback on what you said, but I just feel that there is just this huge need for women to figure out how to embrace being sexy throughout their lives. And I think that, you know, when you're young and you don't have anything to care about, you know, you just wake up and you look sexy, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, like you just, you ate Taco Bell at 5 a.m. and you wake up 2 hours later and you still hot. Like, come on now.
You're
like,
good. You know,
right. But I do feel that that as we age, there's different, like you said, now all of a sudden we get into these different demographics and it's harder for women to find what defines sexy for me. And then also to add on to that is now we're going through these body processes. Now we're going through the menopause, or we're going through hysterectomies, or we're going through this, or we're going through that. And there's so many physical things that now play a role, and it's hard to start to define what it is and how, and us still wanting to be wanted. And you have a partner, no matter where you are in life, you want your partner to look at you as that 20-year-old. Like, you want them to feel that you're still sexy and you're vibrant. But sometimes we're so hard on ourselves, or it's hard for us. So I love that you guys are having these open forums, because it's so important for women to be able to come together and be like, oh, I was feeling self-conscious about that, but now I see that's not, or, you know, oh, wow. Oh, so that's not just me. So I love that you guys are spreading that positivity, because it's important to show
it's
people.
It's very like, important. And I love.
You're 7 years old. You're still fine.
Listen, and to have a 70-year-old talk about experiencing delicious, pleasurable sex across from a 25-year-old, and to see them, like, we had a conversation in New York, and I love to ear hustle the conversations. Mm-hmm. And
I would definitely be ear hustling that one, because that's gonna be me.
Oh yes,
like, girl, what you doing?
Exactly. And to walk around and to hear people talking about all the things, and to have a person in their 70s say, oh no, this is the best sex I've ever had in my life. You know, I'm having that because I know what I like, I know what I don't like. I don't feel inclined to entertain things that are not pleasurable to me. I also know that good sex is not based on penetration, that good sex begins in my mind, and it begins with communication and us knowing and being able to say, as two adults, I consent to you doing this with me. Do you consent? You know? And like, that's the kind of conversation that we get to have. And I think that the ageism is a beast. Ageism says you're too young for this and you're too old for that. And both of those are lies. It doesn't matter how young you are. You may be wiser than a lot of older people. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You may be very vibrant and sexy and adventurous than a lot of younger people. I really wish that we could figure out a way to disentangle ourselves from these stereotypes and tropes that don't serve any of us. They don't make us happy. They make us second guess ourselves. They make us very self-conscious and insecure. And so that origin story that you asked me, you were like, now Omi, how did you even start this thing? We ask people to do their origin story. Go back to your younger self when you were adventurous. And why did you feel it was okay to be adventurous? And how do you pull that younger self back up and fully integrate her? Because she's still there. She's waiting for you to invite her to be more present with you.
Mm. And you have to also be intentional too. Like, you know, that's the other thing, not to go off, because I'm gonna have to have you back so we can talk about some of these topics.
Okay.
But that's the other thing too. I feel that people, and you said it earlier as well about being intentional about, you know, whatever you're doing in life. But I think it's also to live, you have to live an intentional life as well. And I think a lot of people forget that you have to have those checkpoints with yourself. Like, what do I need from myself? What are the things that make me feel better? What are the things that I should engage in more for my mental health or my physical health or whatever? And I think a lot of times we get so caught up in going to work or taking care of kids or doing this or doing that. And we forget that we also have to be intentional about our own happiness and making sure that we're living purposeful lives. So don't worry about the menopause right now. We need you to be worried about, let's get that smile back, get your glow back. What makes your wheels turn? What makes you happy? Like, those are the things you got to be intentional about. You know, every day I say that, you know, to my friends, I'm like, every day, or one of the questions I always get is because people look at and they're like, oh, you got like 82 jobs. You're always doing stuff. What do you do for fun? And I immediately always answer, my life is fun. I live a fun life. I don't do anything I don't want to do. I don't eat anything I don't want to eat. I don't go anywhere I don't want to go. When I want to go somewhere, I go. I only have people around me that are positive. Like, you have to stop letting people dictate what you are. If I want to wear a bikini, I'm wearing a bikini. If I want to wear a Hoochie Mama dress that I got off of Shein for $5, guess what? I'm wearing it. Like, I don't care. I live an intentional life. And so, yeah. When you live like that, you don't have to start figuring out how to, you know, oh, well, I need to do this, or yeah. I wish I could do that. Like, just make the decision every day. But anyway, I'm gonna get off my soapbox.
I feel you. Yeah. It's important.
I love that. And I love what you guys are doing. Girl, I'm so excited to network with you.
Thank you.
I knew I liked you for a reason.
Me too.
This.
Me too.
Because that's how it is. When you're aligned in what your purpose is in life, and when you're aligned and doing positive things, it's like you only pull in other positive people, like other people that are doing the same thing. And now we're all aligning together, doing great things. I love it. I love it. I love it.
I think there's a huge reckoning that's been happening over the last 4 years, to be certain. I think that a lot of people are unlearning things that aren't useful, unlearning things that may be attached to our families and the ways that we were raised, some of the messages we might have heard for a lot of different reasons, our cultures. You know, we're just like, how am I going to be a happy person? Who is like, what's my satisfiable self? Like, how do I engage my satisfiable self? And I really love what you say. I surround myself with people who not only I enjoy, but people who know what my values are. So when I am steering off and it feels like I'm falling off my mark or I'm having a hard time, that they say to me, what's going on, Omi? Like, I'm noticing some things. Like, are you okay? And they won't allow me to just say, oh, you know, I'm just tired. They're like, are you tired? Like, is there more to that? And I'm like, there might be more. And they're like, I'm available. And I try to do the same thing with them. If I know I'm in a relationship with you, I will ask. I do this with my kids. My oldest son is 32 years old. He is not a child. He's my child, but he is not a child. Mm-hmm. So if he reaches out to me or I reach out to him and I'm like, how you doing? And he goes, I don't know, mom. I'm like, well, would you like for me to listen or do you want me to like problem solve? And he'll say, sometimes he'll say, just listen. More often than not, he'll say, can you listen and then help me problem solve? And I'm like, absolutely. Go ahead, say what you need to say. And I'll listen. And then I'll reflect back what I heard. I'm like, is that right? Does that sound right? And he's like, yeah, no, that's right. I'm like, well, what do you want? What will make you feel most satisfied in this situation? And you know what? He did that with me a couple of weeks ago. I was bugging out about a situation and I called him. I said, can your mother ask your opinion on something? He's, of course. So I laid out the situation for him and he literally said to me, what would be satisfiable for you in this moment? And I was like, that's a really good question. And so I told him what I felt like would be satisfiable. He said, then I suggest you do that. I said, you are so smart. He said, I learned from you. I said, oh, don't do that.
You your mama's baby. Your mama's baby.
I started crying. He said, okay, gotta go. Love you, bye. But because I'm so emotional. And I just really appreciated him reflecting that to me. And it didn't feel like I was parentifying him. I was not making him my parent. I was talking to him as an adult. I value his opinion. He is a wise and a beautiful young man. And so for him to be able to pour into his mom and be like, what is satisfiable for you in this moment? And for me to say, this is what I would like. He said, then I support you in doing that and call me back and let me know how that goes. And I did. And so I think that's what we all get to do as this world is changing so much. We're in such a fascinating time that's really hard in a lot of ways and troubling and also really beautiful in a lot of ways. And it's just like how we can support each other no matter where we are feels important.
I love that. I love that. Okay, now I gotta call my son. But now I thank you for guilting me. Now I gotta call this mofo and check on him. Thank you.
You're welcome. Tell him I said hey.
I'm like, well, somebody guilted me. Now I gotta check on you. Now I gotta go buy him a Valentine or something. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But okay. So again, we definitely have to have you back because I wanted to get some more of your information. I definitely thank you for, I receive all of those positive vibes that you send. I definitely receive it. I love when I'm able to absorb energy from other people. So I love that. Now, so for anyone that's watching or listening, go ahead, tell everyone all the things that you're working on, how they can like, support, follow you, all that great stuff.
Great. So we are about to launch season 6 of the podcast. So you can listen to us anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, Apple, Spotify, all the things. You can check us out on social media. We're on Instagram at Black Girls Guide to Menopause. It was too long to put surviving in there, so they made us chop it up. But it's at Black Girls Guide to Menopause. Our website, however, is www.blackgirlsguidetosurvivingmenopause. We will also be launching some IG Live conversations this year. We're wanting to expand the conversation about menopause experiences to talk to formerly incarcerated people. So we will be having conversations with people who were incarcerated when they started experiencing perimenopause or started experiencing perimenopause upon reentry and what that was like for them. So we're really excited about that. This year's podcast, we will be doing in pairs. So we'll have siblings, partners, spouses, best friends talking about menopause and how menopause is not an isolated experience. It affects all of your relationships and all of your roles. So I think that people will like that and we'll have a lot more to share soon. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I subscribed, so I was trying to listen as well. So I'm definitely going to be caught up by the time the season starts getting.
It's going to be great. I think you're going to have a great time. It's going to be, we're excited. Yeah.
Yes. I love that. Okay. So you guys, I always say, if you go down to the podcast links, I mean, if you go to down to the podcast notes, I will have clickable links on there so you can actually go and find all of the resources. You can find all of Omi Sade's social media tags, all of the website information as well will be in the podcast notes, because some people will watch us on Spotify and they'll just watch the videos and then they're like, then they'll send me an email. How do I get in touch with them? Read the podcast notes. I do a very thorough job. I type it up. It's all grammatically correct. Yeah. I got clickable links, hyperlinks in there, and then they still send me an email. So just look at the notes.
Look at the notes, y'all. And I want to apologize for my pixelated looks if you are watching the video. For some reason, my Wi-Fi is wonky today, but hopefully you'll be able to hear our voices.
I promise when they put it together, you'll be fabulous. No one will even be able to tell. So I love that. Well, again, you guys, click on the links. Be sure to follow, like, subscribe. Of course, make sure you're supporting all of our guests. Make sure you follow me, subscribe to all of my podcasts as well so you don't miss an episode. So thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me. This was great, and I would love to come back anytime.